The Introduction by Catherine Lee Bates. The life of Jesus Christ, related with supreme dignity and surpassing beauty in the Gospels, cannot be told too often. In this book of New Testament stories, the life of Christ is set forth in simple language for young children. The four Gospels tell mainly about the manhood of Jesus, how he journeyed from place to place with his little group of disciples, healing the sick, preaching the Word of God. Jesus was himself the Word, for God is love, and the life of Christ was love. I wish that we might have had one gospel more, written by Mary, to tell us of the clinging child, the eager boy, the earnest youth who was the light of the carpenter's home in Nazareth. The longing to know more of those early years has been so great that simple people, centuries ago, caught at floating legends that we no longer credit. How Jesus, at play with other children, molding clay into images of donkeys and cows and dogs, fashioned little sparrows that flew at his command. How when old Joseph, who, the story said, was not very skillful at his carpenter's trade, would find he had made a door too wide or a shelf too long, Jesus would touch the timber and instantly door or shelf became as Joseph would have it. How one day Jesus' playfellows spread their garments on the ground for him to sit on, and having made a crown of flowers, put it upon his head, and stood on his right and left as the guards of a king. And if anyone happened to pass by, they took him by force and said, "Come hither and worship the king, that you may have a prosperous journey." Though these tales are only the fancies of wistful hearts, not the memories of those who had seen that blessed childhood, yet even in these there is at least a grain of truth. We know from what Jesus said and did that he cared for all living creatures, and especially for birds. We are sure that his young hands always were quick to help, and we can easily understand that the little Nazarenes would make him the center of their games. Devout old painters like to picture the carpenter's shop, Joseph busy with his saw and Mary sitting by, her sewing fallen to her knee while her look dwelt tenderly on the holy child as he gathered up the chips and shavings, with the flutter-winged cluster of cherubs doing their best to aid. Is there any surer way to make the boyhood of Jesus more real and vivid to us? Yes, from pictures and books about the Holy Land, and from visiting these scenes of Jesus' youth, we can see something of what he saw. From brief mentions in the New Testament, we can learn a little of the family life, and from Christ's own references to features of the landscape and the happenings of the neighborhood so familiar to him, we can glean yet more. So together, let us in imagination go, as pilgrims for hundreds and hundreds of years have gone, by sea, by land, in dream, in prayer, to Nazareth. Palestine is in size but a small strip of the earth. An express train could run through it from top to bottom in 3 hours. It consists, from west to east, of a coast lying between the blue Mediterranean, a low coast broken only by the long, level lift of Mount Carmel, then of a range of hills running north and south, on one of whose slopes Nazareth is built, then of the Jordan Valley widening out into the Sea of Galilee, and finally, a bordering tableland. The four divisions in the time of Christ were Galilee to the north, then Samaria in the center, farthest to the south, Judea, and Perea, which included all the region lying east of the Jordan and south of the Jabbok. Nazareth is now a large town, as Syrian towns go, sweeping well up the hillside, its white flat-roofed houses gleaming out from fig trees and olive groves. Under Roman rule, it probably was even larger, an important city, as the New Testament always terms it, among 200 towns and villages of Galilee, where people lived in such close quarters that Jesus may early have learned to slip away into the hills for quiet thought. The house was probably built of stone, as the houses of Nazareth are today, and may have had, like some of these, a garden enclosed by a cactus hedge. Joseph almost certainly was a mason as well as a carpenter, for the builders of his time worked in stone more than in wood. Perhaps his son was taught to carve in marble. One likes to think that Jesus, as a boy, may have known the joy of the artist. At every hour he knew the thrill of beauty, and often would have climbed unto the brow of the hill whereon their city was built, for the wonderful view reaching from the purples of Mount Carmel to the dazzling snows of Mount Hermon. If Joseph had his workshop at home, his house, its square outline softened by blossoming vines like the close-pressing houses of his neighbors, may possibly have had two stories. A Jew of a proud old family descended from King David, Joseph was by no means ashamed of being a working man, for the Hebrew commanded that every boy be taught a trade. As one of the rabbis wrote, "Labor honors the laborer." On a summer morning, the little household would be early astir. On the flat roof, whose low parapet guarded a restless child from a fall, Jesus would have been sleeping snugly wrapped up in a colored quilted coverlet, not unlike our puffs or comforters. From the open housetop, before his eyes had closed in a tired boy's sound slumber, Jesus would have seen the same moon and stars, the same trooping constellations that keep watch over us today, and on waking he would have looked on the fresh rose of dawn, lifting his heart to the joy of a new day. He would have been happy in the color and fragrance of the hour, and would have had a gentle smile for the doves resting on the parapet, unafraid as he stepped near. Then, quite naturally, Jesus would have risen, taken up his light bed, and carried it down the ladder stair to the large living room below. Here the family quilts were each neatly rolled up and tucked away on a low bench that ran against the walls nearly all the way around the room. On this ledge were arranged such few articles as even the simplest housekeeping needs, clay pots and bowls, and a lamp shaped like a saucer with the wick floating on the surface of the olive oil. On either side of the door stood a tall, slim water jar. In a corner of the room was a great wooden chest, painted in some bright design, holding the family treasures, scrolls of the law and the prophets, finely woven robes and other choice raiment. In another corner of the room might be seen a broad stool, colored as gaily as the chest, and here and there were great clay vessels for the storing of grain and vegetables, wicker baskets of fruit, and a pile of palm leaf mats which, spread upon the floor or upon the bench, gave the parents easier couches. Jesus, indeed, liked best of all, when the night was warm, to sleep out on the hills, rolled in his loose Galilean coat. By the time the washing and prayers required by the Jewish rule were finished, and Joseph had come in from his workshop, or come up if the living room formed a second floor, Mary was placing on the painted stool, now drawn out into the open space, a tray bearing thin rounds of new bread and a large bowl of rice, into which Joseph and any guests, sitting on their heels in Eastern fashion around the low stool, dipped their hands in turn. For Mary had risen first of all the household, and one of the red water jars gracefully balanced on her erect head had tripped down the stony road to the town spring, now called Lady Mary's Fountain, for water. Perhaps, too, she, with the help of a neighbor, another mother in Israel, had been grinding corn at her handmill, lightly kneading the moistened meal, and then baking the dough, spread into these thin layers in the neighborhood oven. Breakfast over, water would be brought for the washing of fingers, and Joseph would give his son the task for the day. If he bade Jesus help him in the shop, we may be sure that many a passer-by lingered in the open door to hear the strange, wise talk of the bright-faced young apprentice sitting on the floor and working away with plane or drill on the flat board that served as carpenter's bench. But if it were a holiday, how gladly Jesus went out on one of his long rambles. He could walk to Mount Tabor in 2 hours, to the Sea of Galilee in 5, and all the way he was noting where the foxes had their holes and the birds of the air their nests, delighting in the scarlet splendor of the wild lilies. Even Solomon in all his glory was not arrayed like one of these, watching the life of vineyard and threshing floor and marketplace. He would meet shepherds leading their flocks through green pastures, gathering the lambs in their arms and carrying them in their bosom. He would pause to hear the pipers on the road to some grand wedding, playing a tune for the dancing children who frolicked after them. He would follow the bees to find where they hid their honeycomb. He would stand to see the sower scattering his seed, a fisherman letting down his net, a hen gathering her chickens under her wings. And all these common things had deep and beautiful meaning for him, the more common, the more divine, as if his Father in heaven were, through them, giving him a message. Mary often felt that she did not understand when her star-eyed son told her of the thoughts that had come to him from the fields and hills. But his mother kept all these sayings in her heart, and Jesus increased in wisdom and stature, and in favor with God and man.